Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, January 28th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article on the front page, demand high for second round of PPP funding. Local financial institutions say businesses have been quick to file applications for federal assistance, by Jeff Montgomery. For the second time in as many years, a federal program is providing a lifeline for many businesses, including in the tri-state area, struggling amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Federal lawmakers last month approved another stimulus package aimed at propping up the ailing American economy. The second round of the Paycheck Protection Program was opened to applicants in mid-January. Leaders in the local financial industry are seeing high levels of demand for the assistance. While the financial support trickles down from federal sources, financial institutions such as banks and credit unions are tasked with processing applications and disbursing funds. Tut Fuller, president and CEO at Dubuque Bank and Trust, said businesses wasted little time applying for assistance. He explained that the parent company of DB&T, Heartland Financial USA, established an online portal through which companies could apply for funds. Quote, within the first 12 hours of the portal being opened, Heartland received 1,000 applicants, end quote, Fuller said. The second round of PPP funding allows applications from companies that did not receive funding last year, as well as companies that already received a, quote, first draw, end quote, loan and spent the full amount on authorized uses. Those seeking a second round of PPP dollars, known as the second draw, must have no more than 300 employees and be able to demonstrate a 25% reduction in gross recipients between comparable quarters in 2019 and 2020, according to the SBA website. The SBA requires companies receiving funds to maintain employees and compensation levels. Lauren Rice, an associate professor of accounting and business at Clark University, believes the program is largely accomplishing its goals of strengthening the economy. He said the unemployment rate could have gone up 50% if not for the second round of funding. And by keeping people employed rather than relying only on issuing government checks directly to individuals, the program is giving Americans a sense of dignity and purpose, he said. Quote, I think it is definitely keeping people in jobs that would have disappeared otherwise, he said. People in general prefer to work rather than just having a check show up. Work is about more than just the paycheck, end quote. As the second round of the PPP gets into full swing, many in the financial industry are quick to note that the sense of chaos that defined the initial round is no longer in place. In 2020, many companies were competing to, quote, be the first in line, end quote, because they feared funds for the program would run out quickly, recalled Wayne Brecken, first vice president and regional credit officer at Midwest One Bank in Dubuque. Financial institutions realized this sense of urgency and worked around the clock to help clients submit applications. Quote, what the bankers did was basically say, our clients need us and we will do whatever it takes to get these applications in and make sure they are complete so they don't get kicked off to the side, Brecken said. It was a big effort industry-wide. There were people working 60, 70, 80 hours per week for several weeks on end, end quote. This time, there is a greater sense of calm and familiarity surrounding the program. Fuller of DB&T recalled that many companies believed the program was, quote, too good to be true, end quote, the first time. There is not as much skepticism now. Quote, there is a higher level of trust in the government and a higher level of understanding of the program, he said, and people are willing and ready to go out and seek assistance, end quote. Financial institutions have refined their processes. Dubuque Bank and Trust and Midwest One have rolled out new technologies and tools to help customers navigate the PPP process in 2021. John Kimball, Senior Vice President and Manager of SBA Lending for Midwest One, thinks the implementation of new technology will be among the lasting legacies of the PPP. Quote, for some banks, this was the first time dipping their toes into financial technology, Kimball said. Through this, we have really seen the power of technology to help bankers deliver in a personal manner. I think this experience is going to create a sea change in the industry, end quote. For the time being, economists hope the second round of PPP will keep businesses open and people employed. Rice of Clark University cautioned that the economy is still a long way from returning to a sense of normalcy. Quote, once vaccinations get in people's arms, then a lot of the limitations that exist should go away, end quote, said Rice, noting that it will be months before most Americans are vaccinated. Our next front page article, Vaccine Clinic Draws Crowd, Drive-Through Option Proves Popular by Bennett Goldstein, Darlington, Wisconsin. Handling glass vials of perhaps the most coveted item in the world evokes a mix of emotions, said nurses from the Lafayette County Health Department on Wednesday. Anxiety, exhilaration, and hope. Quote, it's like liquid gold, end quote, said Public Health Officer Julie Leibfried as she prepared syringes. Department staff and volunteers orchestrated a drive-through COVID-19 vaccination clinic Wednesday in Darlington, one of several that have occurred in January. In Wisconsin, healthcare providers, long-term care facility staff, and residents, first responders, correctional officers, and now residents age 65 and older are eligible for vaccines. Public health nurses have vaccinated more than 700 Lafayette County residents and workers since receiving their first shipment in late December. On Wednesday, cars snaked through the parking lot outside the Ames Road multipurpose building. Quote, they are so excited, end quote, said public health nurse Molly Blackburn. Quote, it's like winning the lottery, end quote, delivering doses. Public health department across the nation have grappled with unpredictable vaccine deliveries as federal officials rolled out the initial shipments during the final days of the Trump administration. Quote, the first 200 doses we found out on Sunday and they came on Monday and we about cried, end quote, said public health technician Aaron Hassert with a laugh. Deliveries since have proceeded smoothly, she said. The two vaccines approved for use in the United States, manufactured by New York-based Pfizer and Massachusetts biotech firm Moderna, require two doses to confer immunity, administered 3 and 4 weeks apart, respectively. Recipients' names are entered into the Wisconsin Immunization Registry, and Lafayette County Health Department staff call them to schedule their second dose. Mixed emotions. Donna Wettage, 66, of Schulzberg, felt relief after getting her first dose Wednesday. Quote, my oldest brother passed away in late March of COVID, she said. It just happened so fast, end quote. Now, Wettage only leaves her house to attend appointments. She relies on her son to order the essentials. As soon as Wettage develops immunity a few weeks after obtaining her second shot in March, she intends to go walking with a friend. Quote, and then have pop or something and visit for a long, long time, Wedgie said. We talk on the phone, but it isn't the same, end quote. Several recipients and their routines will not change after they are vaccinated. They do not know when they will feel safe again. Quote, I'll still be staying home and staying away from the parties, end quote, said Steve Simons, 69, of Benton. Quote, I go shopping once a week and that's about all I do, end quote. Chase this away. Vaccine recipients awaited in their cars for 15 minutes following their injections. In the event someone experiences an allergic reaction, the nurses can administer epinephrine, which they keep on hand. But aside from a few sore arms, the county has gone without incident. A miniature Pomeranian named Dookie caused Wednesday's morning's only disruption. The yaps from the pint-sized dog filled the parking lot. Quote, I might need help with this next one, end quote, Leibfried told nurse Leah Walrack. Quote, one of us might have to pet the dog, end quote. The canine's owner, Darlington resident Kelly Boyle, shrugged off the needle stick after receiving his shot. Quote, it's a good feeling, the 69-year-old said. It's a good feeling that we're finally going to chase this thing away, end quote. Boyle already contracted COVID-19 and at the time was unaware whether he would survive. He does not know how his life will change or whether he will do differently once he is immune. Quote, I've never really given it any thought, end quote, Boyle said. And our last front page article, Dubuque Sheriff eyes staffing changes. Joe Kennedy asks supervisors to consider moving 5 deputies from county jail to road patrol by Benjamin Fisher. Dubuque County Sheriff Joe Kennedy has proposed a significant change in his department's presence both in the county jail and on the county roads. In his annual budget presentation to the County Board of Supervisors, Kennedy pitched moving 5 deputies from the county jail to road patrol and placing them with non-certified corrections personnel. This change would come with a hefty upfront price tag and reimagine the day-to-day operations inside the jail. However, Kennedy told the supervisors that this is one way to solve a problem he has seen coming for years. Quote, going back to 1990, the population was 86,403, he said. The expected population when they get the census completed is around 97,700. All the population growth has been in the county, which is our coverage area, end quote. The size of his department's road patrol, Kennedy asserted, has not grown enough to keep up with the population, adding just one deputy and one captain in those 30 years. He based his notion on federal statistics that prescribed the appropriate number of law enforcement per person in a jurisdiction. Quote, if you look at the number of people we have to cover, we should have between 36 and 45 road patrol deputies, according to national standards, he said. We have 19 plus one captain. We're not asking to more than double our road patrol to cover these areas. We're asking for an incremental growth of our road patrol over the next 5 years, end quote. He proposed one deputy per year be moved from jail duty to road patrol over 5 years. In that time, those deputies and three current part-time civilian jail personnel would be replaced by seven full-time civilian jail personnel. Kennedy said civilian personnel would not be armed, transport inmates, file charges, or serve arrest warrants, as the deputies in the jail can. For this reason, they could enter the job at a lower pay scale. Quote, when I look at some of the basic jobs we're doing, I question if we need a certified deputy to be doing that, end quote, said jail administrator Captain Mike Munster. Quote, as it pertains to caring for the inmates, we won't be lacking in that with the civilian officers, end quote. County Supervisor Ann McDonoghue pointed out that the proposal represents a significant change at the jail. Quote, this is a direction that we've not gone before, end quote, she said. Quote, it is certainly an out-of-the-box way of thinking, end quote. The plan would start in fiscal year 2022 when one deputy would move from the jail to the road. That deputy would, and three part-timers would be replaced with three full-time civilian staff that year. According to County Human Resources Administrator Don Sherman, that would cost the county an extra $165,400, even after factoring in the $77,250 in savings by losing the three part-time positions. It would also require the purchase of a new patrol vehicle, which isn't included in the $165,400 figure. Kennedy said that by his math, the lower salaries of the civilian personnel versus adding five patrol deputies while keeping the five jail deputies would be an annual savings of $71,000 to the county after the five-year phase and period. County Budget Director Stella Rundy said she would get back to the supervisors with more solid numbers. County Supervisor Harley Pothoff, a recently retired road patrol captain for the Sheriff's Department, said the change would satisfy a need in the county. Quote, if you have more patrol out there, it is going to increase highway safety, end quote, he said. Supervisor Jay Wickham was generally supportive of the additional coverage the change would give to the residents of the county's smaller cities. He pointed out that they have municipal governments as well. Quote, if you look at the population numbers, the unincorporated numbers haven't grown very significantly, he said. The growth has been in those small towns, Asbury, Epworth, Peosta, mainly along the Highway 20 corridor. One alternative is those cities provide some funding, end quote. Kennedy said that, perhaps more than anything, the change provides a solution to the problem of recruitment. Quote, it's been a well-documented nationwide that difficulties law enforcement is having recruiting personnel, he said. At the same time, we have people who are interested in working in law enforcement but can't pass the civil service test for some reason or can't pass the physical. This offers them a foot in the door and allows us to retain officers who might rather be working outside of the jail, end quote. County budgets are due to the state of Iowa by March 31st. Moving to page 2, Dubuque local news. Two new COVID-19-related deaths in Dubuque County. Grant County, Wisconsin has one death, 20 new virus infections, Telegraph Herald. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Wednesday's developments included Dubuque County reported two additional COVID-19-related deaths between 5 p.m. Tuesday and 5 p.m. Wednesday, bringing the county's death toll to 161. Grant County had one additional death, brings its total to 79. Dubuque County added 26 more COVID-19 cases in that time frame, and the county's 14-day positivity rate remained at 10%. Clayton County had five new cases. The county's rate remained 7%. Jackson County reported two new cases, and its positivity rate remained 11%. Delaware County also had two cases and a rate of 12%. Jones County reported one more case during the 24-hour span, and the county's positivity rate remained at 11%. The state website did not report any additional related deaths in the other four counties. On Wednesday, the Iowa Department of Public Health released updated county-level hospitalization data as of Monday afternoon, which showed Dubuque County had five residents hospitalized with COVID-19, an increase of two over Sunday. Jackson County had four residents hospitalized, changed. Jones County had 3, an increase of 1. Delaware County had 2, unchanged. Clinton County had 1 resident hospitalized, no change. As of 5 p.m. Wednesday, 2 Dubuque County long-term care facilities remain on the state's outbreak list. Stonehill Care Center reports 15 cases during the past 14 days, according to the state. And Noble Nursing and Rehabilitation has had 1 case confirmed in the past 2 weeks. Iowa statewide total confirmed cases grew by 995 Wednesday, for a total of 315,415. The state's related death toll increased by 8 to 4,500. In Wisconsin, Grant County reported 20 additional cases Wednesday. Lafayette County had an increase of 11 cases. Iowa County saw an increase of 5 cases. Crawford County had an increase of 4 cases. Statewide, Wisconsin reported 1,382 new cases Wednesday, pushing the total to 536,546. There were 34 additional related deaths reported, so the state count moved to 5,787. In Illinois, Joe Davies County showed 7 new cases Wednesday. Statewide, Illinois reported 3,751 new cases Wednesday, along with 81 more related deaths. That pushed the state's totals to 1,112,181 cases and 18,964 deaths. News in brief, Joe Davies County Foundation receives a $200,000 gift, Elizabeth, Illinois. A $200,000 gift will allow Community Foundation of Joe Davies County officials to start a project aimed at helping more people access food, among other efforts. Foundation officials recently announced their recipient of the anonymous gift, which will be used for multiple funds and projects. Officials plan to put $50,000 into the Joe Davies County Youth Fund, which supports efforts aimed at area children. Another $40,000 will go to the Joe Davies County Future Fund to support economic security, education, and community development needs. Starting this year, that fund can be used to provide grants to local nonprofits, according to an online announcement. Another $10,000 will support an effort to understand food insecurity, map places and locations providing food to people in need, and identify gaps where resources can focus their efforts. The remaining $100,000 will go toward operational support for the foundation. SW Wisconsin County boasts lowest unemployment rate in the state. Darlington, Wisconsin. Lafayette County boasted an unemployment rate of 3.4% in December, the lowest for any county in the state of Wisconsin. The state's Department of Workforce Development released December's estimates of unemployment and employment statistics Wednesday. The figures show Grant County's unemployment rate was at 3.9% in December, the third lowest in the state. Crawford and Iowa counties had unemployment rates of 6.5% and 4.5% in December, respectively. 5 people injured in a 3-vehicle crash in Dubuque. 5 people were injured in a 3-vehicle crash Monday in Dubuque. Ronald T. Moonstone, 57, Angela M. Homan, 42, Mia V. Homan, 12, Whitney M. Homan, 11, and Ella O. Homan, 9, all of Dubuque, were taken by ambulance to Unity Point Health Finley Hospital for treatment, according to a Dubuque police report obtained Wednesday. The crash occurred at about 7:45 a.m. Monday on Pennsylvania Avenue at its intersection with Embassy West. Police said Jamie L. Post, 44, of Cassville, Wisconsin, was westbound in the left lane when he attempted to turn right onto Embassy West from an improper lane, then attempted to quickly change lanes and sideswiped a Munson's vehicle, which was traveling west on Pennsylvania in the right lane. A Munson's vehicle struck a vehicle driven by Angela Homan, which was on Embassy West on the north side of the intersection. Post was cited with turning from an improper lane. Police, the Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported. Megan B. Sarazin, 23, reported the theft of a motor vehicle worth $15,000 at about 9:05 p.m. Tuesday. Jean M. Winders, 66, reported a fraud case involving the theft of $600 between Friday and at 3:35 p.m. Tuesday. Our next article, Dubuque continues to face hurdles in distributing rental utility assistance. Officials say extensive paperwork can be daunting to the needy, by John Cruz. Despite efforts to get around federal regulations, Dubuque officials continue to face difficulties delivering rent and utility assistance to residents during the pandemic. As of Tuesday, 1,032 people have applied for emergency assistance, but only 38 have been approved, or 3.7%. Of the remaining applicants, 117 were denied, 329 did not return their full application, 547 were determined to be ineligible, and 1 is in pending status. With the passage of the CARES Act in March, the city was allocated $647,000 to assist residents through the COVID-19 pandemic. Of those funds, $104,575 was allocated for utility and rent assistance. So far, $79,713 of those funds have been dispersed. Ryan Feller, self-sufficiency coordinator for Dubuque, said many people who apply for the assistance face roadblocks, whether through federal regulations or excessive documentation requirements. Quote, people that aren't typically reaching out for assistance are reaching out because of the pandemic, end quote, Feller said. She said city staff continue attempts to work around federal stipulations that have prevented applicants from being approved, including the requirement to show a 50% income decrease as a result of the pandemic. The city found the rule was creating application denials for people who needed the assistance the most. Feller said the city was able to decrease the federal requirement to a 25% income decrease. However, she added that the extensive paperwork required to apply for utility and rent assistance stopped many people from attempting to receive it. Quote, that application process can be daunting for a lot of people, especially if they aren't used to it, end quote, Feller said. She said the city continues to reach out to communities throughout Dubuque to assist with the application process. She pointed to extensive efforts to assist members of the Pacific Islander community. Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque also granted $20,000 to the city to help people who had back rent, which also prevents them from qualifying for the federally allocated assistance. She said $14,500 of those funds have been dispersed. Feller said the city is working to approve as many qualified applicants as it can. However, the House Department also has a limited amount of CARES Act funds remaining. When those funds run out, Feller said there still might be those in need. Quote, it's going to depend on the length of the pandemic, end quote, Feller said. City Council member Brad Kavanaugh said the difficulty that city staff has had in approving residents for rental and utility assistance further cements his belief that the city should pursue a more organized effort to combat poverty. Quote, I'm guessing that we aren't reaching everybody, and we need to make sure that people aren't falling through the cracks, end quote, he said. Our next article, Dubuque County to launch central vaccination site, Telegraph Herald. Dubuque County public health officials on Wednesday announced plans to organize a centralized vaccination site once the Iowa Department of Public Health expands the list of eligible vaccine recipients in February. The plan, known as Phase 1B, designates as vaccine eligible all residents age 65 and older, first responders, educators in grades pre-K through 12th grade, and early childhood education and child care workers. County residents age 65 and older will be contacted by their health care providers to schedule an appointment, according to a press release. Walk-ins at the site will not be accepted. The remaining groups eligible for vaccinations will receive instructions from their employers. Quote, the vaccines remain in short supply, which means not everyone in Phase 1B will be able to get the vaccine right away, end quote, the release stated. More than 18,000 people in Dubuque County are at least 65 years old, but the county receives an average of less than 1,000 vaccines per week. Quote, it's critical that residents understand there are no waiting lists for vaccinations, and contacting health care providers and public health to request a vaccination only ties up staff from other essential tasks, end quote, the release stated. Vaccinations could begin as early as Monday, February 1, depending on the number of doses allocated to the county and their delivery date. County officials declined to release details concerning the vaccination site until the County Board of Health reviews the lease at its Friday, January 29th meeting. Some tri-state news. Glass Recycling Drop-Off Center coming to Dubuque by Kaylee Reese. A third glass recycling drop-off site soon will be up and running in Dubuque. The new container will be at Hy-Vee, 2395 Northwest Arterial, through an agreement with Dubuque Metropolitan Area Solid Waste Agency. Agency Administrator Ken Miller said the container's exact location on the store's property still is being discussed, but the information will soon be shared on the agency's social media accounts. The goal is to open the site by early February. Quote, we based it on feedback from residents on areas that they'd like to see glass recycling, and they express interest in the west end of town, end quote, he said. Hy-Vee store director Paul Hopman said he believes the container will be located toward the front of the store, and people will be able to dump glass at any time. Quote, we work really hard on recycling here at the store and donating our pulled food products, making sure we're composting so that So this is just the next step, he said. And honestly, it'll be good for us to have an outlet for our glass too, end quote. The agency started two other glass recycling drop-off sites in April, one at the Dubuque landfill and one at the City of Dubuque's Municipal Service Center, 925 Kerper Court. An $18,000 Iowa Department of Natural Resources grant covered the cost for all the containers. Miller said Galena, Illinois, and Bellevue, Iowa also haul their recycled glass to Dubuque landfill. Each of those communities has one recycling container located in town. The landfill has been receiving recycled glass from Galena since January 2020, and Bellevue just starting hauling its glass to Dubuque in December. Miller said the landfill collected just more than 120 tons of glass last year from all of the sites hauling glass to the landfill, much more than the roughly 25 tons of glass initially estimated. Quote, it's proven to be a pretty popular program, end quote, Miller said. Bev Wagner, agency education and communication coordinator, said staff members were happily surprised with the level of participation in the program. She added that there hasn't been much contamination or non-glass items put in the containers, which could put a stop to the program if increased. Glass has to be processed differently than other recyclables, Wagner said. There aren't many nearby centers with this capability, which is why the City of Dubuque dropped the collection of glass recycling years ago. The closest place that processes recycled glass is in Kansas City, which is where the landfill sends its haul, Wagner said. The glass then is turned into fiberglass insulation or made into new glass bottles. Quote, when the city dropped glass recycling, that was a blow to the core of recycling for many people, she said. The hardcore recyclers felt that glass was really important, and we think that is why people jumped on it so quickly, end quote. Our next article, Maquoketa of city officials recommended interim city manager. Gerald Smith is set to leave his post as city manager on February 19th by Annie Mell, Maquoketa, Iowa. Maquoketa city officials on Wednesday recommended Mallory Smith, the city's property maintenance inspector, step in as interim city manager while it prepares to replace the current city manager, Gerald Smith. Quote, Mallory Smith has great attention to detail, and it makes sense to have her step in to that role because she has a knowledge of existing projects, end quote, said Mayor Don Schwenker. Maquoketa's city officials discussed plans to replace Gerald Smith during their personal meeting on Wednesday and planned to appoint Mallory as the interim city manager during the Monday, February 1 city council meeting. Quote, during the whole COVID-19 thing, Mallory Smith has kind of served more as a deputy city administrator on a lot of COVID-19 grants, end quote, Schwenker said. Quote, she sat in on a lot of street committee meetings we are having for a lot of the big projects like Platt Street. She is very knowledgeable with these kinds of things, end quote. Schwenker said Mallory Smith, who is not related to Gerald Smith, has worked for the city for about a year. He said she plans to fill the position for about the next 7 months and will help the city as it aims to replace the current city manager. Quote, we are going to sit down in the next week or two and kind of rehash the job description and figure out if we want to go through a headhunter agency as we have done in the past or if we have decided to do it in-house, he said. That is something we have yet to decide, end quote. Gerald Smith is a finalist for a city manager position in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, as well as in the Raleigh-Durham area of North Carolina. He first announced he would be leaving Maquoketa last Friday. He was hired as Maquoketa city manager in 2017. He previously served as city manager of Junction City, Kansas. He also has held municipal government positions in Ohio and Illinois. Gerald Smith's last day with the city is February 19th, but he said if Mallory Smith is approved as interim city manager on Monday, he may end his role early. Gerald Smith said he's happy he had the opportunity to work for the city and play a role in its growth. Quote, it's been an exceptional time moving in the progressive direction that they supported, and I enjoyed it while I was here, end quote, he said. Schwenker said the city has enjoyed working with Gerald Smith and credited him for helping with major projects such as the Platt Street Reconstruction Project, as well as helping to receive a federal grant to improve stormwater infrastructure to help mitigate flooding. Quote, he has really helped us tackle some big issues and save a lot of money in the meantime, he said. It's great having him here, and it's sad to see him go, but that's the nature of the business, end quote. Moving to the obituaries, Curtis C. Weitzel, Bagley, Wisconsin. Curtis, known as Kurt Clarence Weitzel, age 78, passed away on Wednesday, January 20th, 2021, after battling multiple medical issues at Gunderson Bosqueville Area Hospital. He was born April 13th, 1942, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. On July 21st, 1972, Kurt married Rose Ann Kalinowski of Mount Hope, Wisconsin, in Milwaukee. They lived in Milwaukee and also moved to various towns, Lancaster, Wallasing, before deciding to settle down in Bagley, Wisconsin. Kurt was skilled at many trades, from running a filing station, working as an electrician, and as a diesel mechanic before deciding to go into business for himself and becoming self-employed as a mechanic. Kurt loved fishing, NASCAR racing, repairing or rebuilding anything in need of repair, and having an occasional beer with friends on the deck. Survivors include his son, Jeffrey Weitzel of Muscoda, Wisconsin, and granddaughter, Aislinn Weitzel. Son Randy Witzel of Owosso, Michigan, and sister Diane Trumba of Cudahy, Wisconsin. In-laws Elaine Weitzel, June Rice, Lois Bowen, Jerry's spouse Joan Bauer, Wayne's spouse Pauline Clark, Dan's spouse Carla Meyer, Russ's spouse Loretta Duncan, Michael's spouse Carol Kalinowski, James Kalinowski, many nieces and nephews. In addition to his parents and his wife, Rose Ann Weitzel, Kurt was preceded in death by a brother, Reginald Weitzel, sister Emma Lou, spouse James Grady, mother-in-law Alberta Kalinowski, in-laws Laverne Bowen and Roland Rice. Private family burial will be in Hemeritage Cemetery, Mount Hope Township. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Bloomington is assisting the family. Online condolences, www.martinschwartzfuneralhomes.com. Yvonne L. Jorgensen. Yvonne L. Jorgensen, 84, of Dubuque, died on Monday, January 25th, 2021. A private family service will be held at Asbury Cemetery. Tri-State Cremation Center of East Dubuque, Illinois, is assisting the family. Mary D. Ginter, Dickeyville, Wisconsin. Mary D., known as Dolores Ginter, 86, of Dickeyville, died on Tuesday, January 26, 2021. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, February 1, at Holy Ghost Church in Dickeyville. A public visitation will be held from 9:30 to 10:15 a.m. Monday at the church. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Joseph Daniel Joyce, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Joseph Daniel, known as Danny Joyce, 88, of Lancaster, died on Monday, January 25th, 2021. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home of Lancaster is assisting the family. Funeral services. Most funeral homes and churches are practicing social distancing guidelines recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Contact specific locations for more information. Genevieve P. Boldeck, Manchester, Iowa. Visitation at 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, January 30th, Leonard Mueller Funeral Home, Manchester. Services 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Irene L. Engelken, Earlville, Iowa. Visitation 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. today, Kramer Funeral Home at Dyersville, Iowa. Massive Christian burial 11 a.m. today, St. Joseph Catholic Church, Earlville. Thomas J. Ganson, Dubuque. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, January 29th, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, Dubuque. Michael S. Horn, Gutenberg, Iowa. Celebration of life 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, February 6th, Dubuque Eagles Club, 1175 Century Drive. Edward H. Kiefer, Asbury, Iowa. Visitation at 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. today, Church of the Resurrection at Dubuque. Massive Christian burial 10:30 a.m. today at the church. Michael J. Kiley, Bagley, Wisconsin. Visitation at 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, January 30th, Martin Schwartz Funeral Home, Bloomington, Wisconsin. Celebration of life following visitation Saturday, Trannell's Canal Street Restaurant and Bar, Bloomington. Paul J. Mesch, Manchester, Iowa. Visitation at 3 to 8 p.m. Friday, January 29th, Leonard Mueller Funeral Home, Manchester. Patrick W. O'Rourke, Dubuque. Visitation at 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday, January 30th, St. Joseph Key West Catholic Church. Massive Christian burial, 10 a.m. Saturday at the church. James R. Sudemeyer, New Vienna, Iowa. Visitation at noon to 1:30 p.m. Saturday, January 30th, St. Boniface Catholic Church, New Vienna. Massive Christian burial, 2 p.m. at the church. Raymond F. Waller, Key West, Iowa. Visitation 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, January 31st, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, Dubuque. Services 10:30 a.m. Monday to February 1 at the funeral home. Moving to the sports page, Prep Athletics, Illinois Prep Sports finally returning to action, but IHSA won't hold playoff series in many activities, by Jim Leitner. The long, painful wait is finally over for Illinois high school athletes. The Illinois High School Association on Wednesday released an updated activity schedule for the remainder of the school year. Activities have been disrupted since March because of the coronavirus pandemic. Quote, we understood the high level of anticipation surrounding today's announcement, along with the scrutiny that will accompany it, end quote, IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson said in a press release announcing the activities calendar. Quote, ultimately, the board adhered to its stated goals throughout the pandemic, providing an opportunity for every IHSA student athlete to compete safely this year and maximizing opportunities for traditional IHSA spring sports after they lost their entire season a year ago. Quote, I recognize that many schools and coaches would likely offer a tweak here or there that would have, in their opinion, made it, quote, better, end quote, for their school or sport. Our board faced an impossible task with a litany of factors. They were conscientious in considering every possibility, and I believe their decisions today are a positive step for the mental, emotional, and physical well-being of our students. We are excited to channel our energy into creating as many positive experiences for Illinois high school students as we can between now and the end of this extraordinary school year, end quote. In sports involving area schools, boys and girls basketball teams may begin practice immediately and can schedule games after holding 7 practices, but their seasons will close on March 13th without a state tournament series. Football practice will begin March 3rd with first game scheduled for March 19th. Its season will end on April 24th without a state playoff series. Volleyball practice begins March 8th and games can commence after a team holds 7 practices. Its season will also end on April 24th without a state playoff series. The wrestling season has been shifted to spring summer with practice slated to begin April 19th and closing on June 12th without a postseason series. The traditional spring sports of baseball, softball, and track and field will all begin practice on April 5th with events allowed after 7 practice sessions. Their seasons will end June 19th, but the IHSA has not made a determination on postseason series. Participants must wear masks at all times unless competing in outdoor activities with ample social distancing. Quote, We still have regions of the state that need to make strides in order to be able to play basketball this winter, Anderson said. That underscores the importance of our schools following all the mitigations and precautions. We need to maintain a positive trajectory not only to get winter sports going, but to make sure we do not have any regions regress before spiraling the summer sports have their opportunity. We can all do our part by wearing a mask and socially distancing. End quote. Our next sports article, Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week, Jack Miskey, Cuba City. Miskey in rarefied air. Cuba City senior makes history by joining 1,000-point club, by Shannon Mum. Cuba City's Jack Miskey has a stellar week for Wisconsin's top-ranked boys basketball team. The Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week scored a career-high 30 points in a win against Wisconsin Heights on Saturday, January 16th. Last Thursday, he scored his 100th point in a 62-46 win over Fenimore, and the following night, the senior scored a team-high 26 points to go along with 11 rebounds and a win over Mineral Point. Quote, last week was just crazy, Miskey said. I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning, let alone all of the games we had last week, end quote. The Cubans, 12-0, had 5 games in a 7-day span, including games against the top 3 teams in this SWAL conference. Quote, it was exhausting, but we know that we can't take a single game for granted this season because of COVID, he said. We have to go out there with the mindset that every game could be our last, and we have to enjoy all the little moments, end quote. The Cubans have undergone the COVID-19 2-week quarantine twice this season and had their undefeated season end last year in March when the coronavirus pandemic began. Quote, last year sucked to have it end that way, but it really put things into perspective for us, Miskey said. You never know if that's going to happen again, and we are just thankful we are getting a season, end quote. During the team's quarantine, Miskey made it a point to do his best to stay in his normal routine, which includes shooting, running, and lifting. Quote, thankfully, I had gotten weights over the summer because we couldn't get into any gyms, he said, and I have a hoop in our shed where I could work on shooting, so I used that when I couldn't get into school. With the fast pace we play at, it's important to stay in shape, end quote. On Thursday, Miskey was unaware he was closing in on the 1,000 point mark until fans started yelling at him during the final minutes. Quote, "I figured I had to be getting close," he said. "It was really nice to do it at home in front of our crowd. It was definitely a memorable moment for me," end quote. Jack and his older sister Elizabeth are the only brother-sister duo in school history to both reach the 1,000 point milestone. Quote, "It's pretty special to be able to share that honor with her," end quote, he said. Jack, who has been starting for the Cubans since his freshman season, has come a long way since then. Quote, "Jack has always been a good player, but now he's one of our top player guys," end quote. Cuba City coach Jerry Pettigrew said, quote, "When Braden Daly went down with an injury, we really needed him to step up as our big guy, and he has done a tremendous job. On top of that, I don't think you will find a finer young man than Jack. He's extremely humble and one of the nicest kids you'll ever meet," end quote. Miskey, who is a UW Milwaukee track and field recruit, had said his confidence in himself has grown immensely over the years. Quote, "As a freshman, I can remember always trying to not do the wrong thing when I was on the court," he said. "Now I am out there trying to create opportunities and not worrying about doing the wrong thing. I have an amazing teammates and we are all just work together so well. It's a special bond that we have and they could help create opportunities for me. This award is just as much theirs as it is mine," end quote. Our last sports article, prep football, Bauman steps away, Maquita native-led football team to new heights in 15 years at home, by Tim O'Neill. The time is just right for Kevin Bauman to step away. That doesn't mean Maquita football and the game in general won't miss him. Bauman, who led the Cardinals program to heights never seen before, announced this week that he is stepping down from his position after 15 seasons in charge and more than 3 decades in education at his alma mater. Quote, 33 years is a long time, but it's just perfect timing, end quote, said Bauman, who led Maquita to a 63-79 record in his tenure, including 6 of the program's 8 all-time playoff appearances. Quote, "I'm hoping my wife can handle it. That's my biggest fear," end quote, he added. Bauman's last season may have been the most trying and helped lead to his decision. The Cardinals went 2-4 this season after having their opener delayed 10 days because of a coronavirus issue within the program. Bauman found himself battling the virus himself a week after the season ended, and his father, Hugh, passed away from complications from COVID-19 shortly after Bauman recovered. Bauman plans to retire from education next year after spending the last 17 years as an assistant principal. "The biggest thing he will miss," he said, "is building relationships with students and athletes alike, but he still plans to be around the program in some capacity." Quote, "Maquita football has always been special to me," he said. "I'm the youngest of 5 boys. My oldest brother is 14 years older than me, and we were all football players. So for me, as soon as I could walk, I was going to Maquita football games, and I still wanted to support the program as much as possible, and I do what I can. I hope the program is going to rise. I think that's what we all want as parents, is that we want our kids to have a better life than us, and I want the next coach to have more success than I did. It's been a struggle at times, but we also had fabulous, 6 out of the 7 years we qualified for the playoffs and did some things that had never happened before at Maquita, pros and cons, but I want success for the next person," end quote. But he's also going to enjoy his free time as much as he can, even if he doesn't yet know exactly what he wants to do. So after putting roughly 25 to 30 hours per week into football in the fall, quote, "I'm sure that something is going to arrive. When the door shuts, another opens. I'm a true believer in that and my faith, so I'm not really worried about it," Bauman said. "I could use some time off. I hear that fall is a beautiful time of the year. That's what people comment, in that there's leaves and things to look at. I know I've got a honey-do list a mile long," end quote. Moving back to some local and tri-state news, Throwback Thursday, Dubuque's sister helped guide football stars through college to Super Bowl, by Eric Hogstrom, a member of Dubuque's Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, had a reason to root for the New York Giants 20 years ago in Super Bowl XXXV. I'm sorry, I don't know the numbers. Sister Kathleen Gilbert had served as an academic advisor for 3 of the New York players while serving on the staff at University of Notre Dame. Here's how the Telegraph Herald reported on Gilbert's Football Association in its January 29, 2001 edition. At Notre Dame, Sister got to know dozens of current NFL players. Sister Kathleen Gilbert doesn't envy Jerry Maguire. For 3 semesters, the nun, who now works at Clark College as an agent for NFL star Rocket Ismail, quote, "It was a terrible job," end quote, Gilbert said. She became close to Ismail, a former All-American and current Dallas Cowboys wide receiver, during her 14 years as an academic advisor to student athletes at Notre Dame. Ismail went to pro after his junior year. He promised his mother, Gilbert, and coach Lou Holtz he would finish his degree. While playing professionally, Ismail came back to college for 3 spring semesters to earn his diploma. Gilbert helped as much as she could and even acted as his agent, taking calls from publicists and journalists. Quote, he's very bashful. He's a great person to interview, but he's kind of shy, end quote, she said. Even though Gilbert and Ismail have left Notre Dame, they remain friends. They talk on the phone and write. He has flown her to games. Gilbert retired from Notre Dame in 1999 and recently was lured back to work for Clark College, where she serves as an academic advisor. Far away from her athlete friends, she watches them on television. At the beginning of the season, Gilbert went through the USA Today's NFL roster and circled the names of students she had worked with. When she was done, there were 36 circles. Quote, some I knew better than others, she said. It's part of life that you get closer to some people than others, end quote. Sunday Super Bowl feature 3 players she worked with, Mike Rosenthal, Dusty Ziegler, and Luke Pettigout, all of the New York Giants, and 2 other players that she knows, Ismail's brother Quadri and Jonathan Ogden, who were on the field for Baltimore. Super Bowl Sunday found her watching the game in a Notre Dame sweatshirt. She was pulling for the Giants, quote, only because I have 3 people I worked with on the team, end quote. Quote, I hope the whole game will be a good game because so many people are looking forward to it, end quote, she said. As the Baltimore held the lead in the first quarter, the Ravens eventually ran away with the game, winning 34-7. Gilbert looks back fondly on her years at Notre Dame. Quote, I consider myself very lucky to finish my very active years at Notre Dame, end quote. News in brief, voting sites set for special elections. Voting sites are set for the special elections in Dubuque. Susan Farber, John Pregler, and Nicole Weber are running in the Tuesday, February 2nd primary election for the Ward 1 City Council seat. The top 2 vote-getters will move on to the March 2nd special election. The ward covers much of the southern and western half of Dubuque. This week, all households in the ward with a registered voter will receive a postcard with details about their polling sites, according to a press release from Dubuque County Commissioner of Elections Kevin Dorgato. Voting sites are 1st Precinct, Rockdale United Methodist Church, 1500 Old Mill Drive, 2nd Precinct, Tri-State Blind Society, 1068 Cedar Cross Road, 3rd Precinct, St. Paul Lutheran Church, 3200 Asbury Road, 4th Precinct, Dubuque County Fairgrounds, 14569 Old Highway Road, and 5th Precinct, Summit Congressional Church, 2885 JFK Road. Voters also can determine their voting site online at DubuqueCountyIowa.gov. The polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Tuesday. Ballots also can be cast at the Dubuque County Election Office on the 4th floor of the County Courthouse in Dubuque from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday through Monday. The office will be open until 5 p.m. on Friday and Monday. Early ballots can be mailed in, also can be picked up at the election office. Completed ballots need to be postmarked by Monday or returned to the election office in the courthouse by 8 p.m. Tuesday. For more information, call the election office at 563-589-4457. One hurt in 2 vehicle crash in Lafayette County, Belmont, Wisconsin. One person was injured in a 2 vehicle crash Tuesday afternoon in Lafayette County. Anna M. Connor, 46, of Belmont, complained of minor injuries and was taken by ambulance to a hospital, according to the Lafayette County Sheriff's Department. A press release states that Connor was traveling on Lafayette County G at 4:35 p.m. Tuesday when she stopped to check on a vehicle in the ditch. Connor's vehicle was struck by a vehicle driven by Kyle R. Road, 25, of Rui. There were no other injuries reported. I think I should be able to get through one, if not both, opinions, so I'm going to head over to that section. Other view, school choice more than just an idea, by Jackie Oka, school choice advocate. From illnesses to lost jobs, the coronavirus crisis has taken a toll on Iowa families. It's also prompted statewide discussion about how to keep kids learning and whether families need more school choice. Difficult as the circumstances are, I'm grateful for the renewed attention we are giving to K-12 education. School choice is much more than an idea to debate in times of trouble. It's a critical tool that allows parents to give their children the learning opportunities that are best for them. School choice operates on the premise that children deserve access to a quality education that meets their needs, regardless of race, color, or income. For many For my family, having a school choice has empowered us to choose a private school for our four daughters, where they receive an education that nourishes our Catholic faith and respects our Hispanic heritage. The primary focus of school choice is personal. It's about students. Choice empowers parents, a child's strongest advocates, and the people who best know his or her skills and interests to select the learning environment that will allow their child to shine. I've seen school choice help my own children thrive, and I hope to see our state continue to expand learning options and resources for Iowa families. My four daughters attend St. Rose of Lima Catholic School in Denison, which is so much more than a school. It's an extension of our family. I didn't get to attend private school growing up, but I'm so thankful I was able to choose this school for my children because it meets the needs of each of my daughters right where they are. I work full-time and volunteer at the school as much as possible. Not only are my daughters learning academic subjects, but they are learning through example about practicing their faith and giving back to the community. The school is always sponsoring family activities and communicating with parents. We have found a home at the welcoming community of St. Rose of Lima. Some families might worry that private school tuition is inaccessible to their family. Fortunately, Iowa has a school tuition organization program, which has helped many families like mine. This program allows individuals to donate to fund tuition grants for students to attend the school of their choosing. Donors receive a 65% tax credit, and the grants go to families who could not afford a private school on their own. A recent bill passed by our legislature even increased funding for this program, allowing several thousand more Iowa children to receive grants every year. But private schools aren't the only school choice. Families can also choose traditional public schools, homeschooling, magnet programs, or virtual education programs. Iowa School Choice includes open enrollment, in which parents in some districts can choose a public school for their child outside their neighborhood boundaries. As a parent, I also believe that school choice does not stop once you've signed enrollment papers at a particular school. School choice means choosing to stay invested in your children's education year-round. Volunteering and being a part of my children's school community has been one of the most rewarding experiences I could have imagined. Particularly this past year, the close-knit community we are a part of has been a steady force that has helped us and our children navigate new challenges. If we can find any good in the coronavirus difficult disruptions, perhaps that good is that all families felt more keenly the impact of their child having or not having a safe place to learn that works for them. It is my hope that the challenges of this past year will encourage our state to expand schools' choice resources so that every family can find a school that supports them through thick and thin. This school choice week, January 24th through the 30th, I am grateful for my family's school choice and the adventures it has taken us on as a growing family. School choice is much more than just an idea. It is a tool used by tens of thousands of families daily so that children can receive an education that is responsive to who they are and how they learn. Again, that opinion came from Jackie Oka, and her husband are the parents of four daughters and live in Denison, Iowa. She is a longtime school volunteer and parent advocate. For our cartoon today, we have Larry King seated at a desk with a microphone, and next to him is an empty chair, but it has a name plaque on it that says God, so it looks like he's getting ready to interview God, and he is up in heaven. There's a bunch of clouds and stuff behind him. And the caption says, Larry King, 1933 to 2021. And Larry's thought bubble says, well, ... if he shows, it'll be an interview of a lifetime. Area news in brief, video footage sought after grandparents scammed in Cascade, Cascade, Iowa. Authorities seek video footage from the Cascade area after scammers bilked local residents out of money by claiming their grandchild was in legal trouble. The Dubuque County Sheriff's and Cascade Police Departments are investigating the scam, which occurred Monday. Quote, the scammers phoned the victims claiming to need money to get a grandchild out of legal trouble, end quote, a press release states. Quote, the scammers then arranged for an accomplice to pick up cash from the victim's residence, end quote. People who live near Cascade High School who have security cameras are asked to review footage between 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Monday for any clips of a white or silver Audi sport utility vehicle, the release states. Anyone with such footage should call Sheriff's Department Investigator Amanda Potter at 563-587-3856. New program director heads Family Promise of Grant County, Lancaster, Wisconsin. A Grant County nonprofit organization that offers services to homeless families has hired a new program director.
Kim Jacobson recently began her post at the helm of Family Promise of Grant County, according to a press release. She has worked as a coordinator for the Iowa County Coordinated Services Team Program, Runaway and Youth Services Program, and Iowa County Teen Court Program. Families in need of shelter for people wishing to volunteer can contact Jacobson at 608-723-3355 or familypromiseGrantCo@gmail.com. San Francisco to strip Washington Lincoln from school names. San Francisco. The San Francisco School Board has voted to remove the names of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln from public schools after officials deemed them and other prominent figures, including Senator Dianne Feinstein, unworthy of the honor. After months of controversy, the board voted 6-1 Tuesday in favor of renaming 44 San Francisco school sites with new names with no connection to slavery, oppression, racism, or similar criteria, the San Francisco Chronicle reported. Feinstein's name was added to the list because as mayor, she replaced a vandalized Confederate flag that was part of a long-standing flag display in front of City Hall. In some schools, families argued for a name change for years, including those at James Denneman Middle School, named after the first superintendent, a racist leader who denied Chinese students a public education. Others argued that current names mean students are wearing school sweatshirts with the names of slave owners, including Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and James Madison. Disney updates Jungle Cruise after insensitivity criticism. Orlando, Florida. Jungle Cruise, one of the original Disney park rides, is getting a 21st century remodel, criticized for its depiction of animatronic indigenous people as savages or headhunters. It's the latest update to a legacy theme park ride, criticized in years past as being racist. The ride will be updated by Disney Imagineers at the Disneyland Park in California and the Magic Kingdom Park in Florida, with a new storyline and characters that, quote, reflect and value the diversity of the world around us, end quote, Disney said in a blog post Monday. Quote, as Imagineers, it is our responsibility to ensure experiences we create and stories we share reflect the voices and perspectives of the world around us, end quote, said Carmen Smith, a Disney executive, in the blog post. The ride first opened at Disneyland in 1955. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, January 28th on Iris. I've been your reader, Aaron. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org at any time. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.